instead of I'm losing a part of myself, I'm giving a part of myself, because that's what we're doing. Yep. That's what art is. Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 127 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking, with me, Louise Fletcher.
And me, Alice Sheridan.
And this week, our main topic comes from a listener question, all the way from New Zealand, so we'll get to that shortly. But first of all, let's talk about what we've been up to this week. So what's your week been like, Alice?
I had a bit of a slump last week, kind of energetically. And actually, I showed up in the co-create session in the membership on Tuesday. And I was like, right, come on, cheer me up. What have you got to share to cheer me up? And they did. Of course they did. It was lovely. I always leave those smiling. They're really good. So I've got a funny to share with you at the end, because I've just been deliberately looking for things that make me feel good, because I know that that is my reset. So I have been, I'm not going to bore you with all the list of the things, all the usual kind of self-carey things that you would hope to be doing. I'm feeling back on track with that now. But what I've also been doing is, within the membership, we have a kind of sequence which is there all the time, but we've been doing it together live. And it's really nice to do things at the same time. There's a kind of momentum thing with people doing everything at once. And it's about kind of visibility and showing up, and we call it the Time to Shine Challenge. And it's really interesting to go through that again to see what's coming up for people. And it's the same thing. It's the same worries about boundaries and whether things are good enough. And, you know, I think perhaps we anticipate that there might be a stage where we get to the end of all of that. And it kind of makes me laugh, because I don't think we do, because I've also been thinking the same thing about my own work this week. You know, what's the point of it? You know, what am I even trying to do here? You know, all of those kind of things. And actually, I've had a really nice painting week. I've been working on small ones and some bigger ones. I went into the studio and I had just that little moment where things suddenly feel like they've turned a corner, and they've gone from that, what's the point? What am I trying to do? I feel like I'm fumbling in the dark. And then you just make little changes and little changes and little changes. And then you get that little frisson of, oh, something's falling into the right place. And I start to feel it. And I just wanted to mention it, because sometimes it can be such a small fraction of the amount of time we spend painting. And I don't mean to say that I don't enjoy, I think always when you paint, you lose track of time, you get into it, you're in the flow, you're doing a thing, you're not thinking about something else, you're concentrating on what you're doing and enjoying the colours and all of that. But most of the time, it's kind of okay. And then every so often you get something and you think, oh. And it can just be a really small percentage, but we need it. And I was having a conversation with somebody the other day about feeling like, you know, you know what helium balloons are like. They're up on the air and then they just kind of sink. And then you just need a little burst of helium balloon energy. So that's what I've been looking for this week. And I think those moments are a little bit fleeting. I've written in the notes that they have long shadows, but I don't mean shadows, because shadows is a negative thing. I mean, they actually can, it's more like an energy wave, isn't it? They can take you a while. And what I mean by that is those little moments in the past where you've been working at something and you have a little breakthrough moment, or an idea suddenly clicks into place, or suddenly something works. That's always an extra layer that never goes away again. It's always still with you for the next stage and the next stage and the next stage. So if anyone else is having those sluggish feelings.
It's making me think of it, because I'm teaching, my course started last week, when you're listening to this, so it would have been last week. And I'm noticing again, it's there are beginners and professionals and everyone in between in that course, but the beginners in particular, they don't get that. And so the problem they have is feeling like, well, I'm not getting anywhere and I've made a muddy mess or this is ugly, without realizing that's 90% of the time when you're working and the bit you're going for is the 10%. But if it wasn't that way, how boring would it be? Oh, I'm going to go in and I'm going to make beautiful things and it's all going to go right. And then I'm going to leave and go have my dinner. And then someone's going to come and buy it. And that'd be great for a few weeks. But then you'd just be like, okay, I've got to make something more exciting for myself than this.
Exactly. And I think that's the struggle with it. And that why, you know, why it's worth sharing that and raising it. Because I don't know, maybe it is enough. And I don't, everybody should decide what's enough for them. But I think I always want something. And some of it is like, you know, is it enough to make an attractive painting? I don't know if it is anymore. You know, I think therefore the struggle is always part of it. I don't like the word struggle. It's more a challenge, isn't it? And I think this time I'm working with things deliberately in a different way. So it's about, and what I wrote down when I was thinking about this yesterday was, and I know that you and I have discussed this, you've got to be prepared to make something ugly. You've got to be prepared to ruin it. I want to avoid the predictable. So I know that there are things that I could do that could make it work and finish, but that feels too easy now. So what I've written down for me is always be looking for those ones that are on the edge and be on the edge as often as you dare.
I love that. I think this should be our main topic. This is...
Well, because maybe we can come back. Maybe we can come back to that.
Well, I was just jumping in to say this is what's happening in my work. Is I started some big panels and I planned to make casual loose marks to get started, and then planned for all that to get covered up, and it looked brilliant. And I loved it, as it always does when I start. And I thought, oh, well, that's to get covered up. And then I thought, does it? Like, hang on a second. I know I'm not interested in a gessoed panel with some black marks on it. I know that's not enough, but I lose that every time. I don't keep that when I keep going and something else emerges. And actually, what if I didn't want to lose that? What if I actually wanted all the history that I love, but that pure energy of beginning? And so I'm trying different approaches on different panels. On some, I'm building up a very strong history in layers of collage and sanding and painting and then going in with loose gesture as a final layer and letting that be.
Yeah.
On some, I'm keeping the original design that came up from the loose marks, but going into areas and adding history and building up and just trying that idea. And what I'm making, I just keep thinking, wow, this is the best thing I've ever done. This is by far the best thing I've ever done. But it's so often mostly not like that. But at the moment, I'm just in that. For the few months before that, after that last series, or maybe for the month after I sold my last series, I just felt so low creatively. I didn't have any ideas of what to do. And it was literally one afternoon of excited gestural painting that I felt like, hang on, this could be it. Like, I could explore this.
Oh, damn, this is fun.
Yeah. And I teach everybody. I'm doing a course called Find Your Joy, which is about doing the things you most enjoy and following that. And yeah, I don't always do it myself, but I know, just like you said, that there's going to be this middle bit now where it's all going to go, not wrong, but it's not going to go anywhere, and I'm going to get frustrated, and that is just part of the process. But having that spark of an idea, that's the 10% you're talking about that keeps you going, because I really want to achieve this now, and this is a challenge for me.
I just think it's, you know, we say it's honest. I think we have to be honest that, you know, sometimes it feels like you're in the sludge, and actually, you know, the only thing that keeps you going is there is a degree of experience that you think if you keep going, something will happen again, something will spark again. But also that sometimes it is time to walk away, do something different, expect something different of yourself. So what I actually did yesterday was I went in and I got a big A1 sheet of paper. And what I was going to do was I was going to, do a kind of exercise for myself where I just divided the space within these squares in different ways using charcoal and marks. And they were quite small little squares that I drew up. I think they were about 9 by 9 centimeters. And I drew them all over this page of A1 paper, and I got my charcoal and my marks, and I was sort of looking at the paintings to get the idea of the divisions of space. And I started making these marks on this paper. And do you know how many I did before I wanted to go and paint again?
How many?
One. I did one of these little things. And then I thought, well, somehow the charcoal is frustrating me. I just want to get a smear of paint. So I got a smear of colour and kind of pushed it all the way across the top part of it. And then I thought, oh, well, now I want to go and do that on the proper painting. And then I was off. So, you know, and so that was, it was just fun. And it's just, it's reassuring when you're in the sludge or you're in the slump, and when you can do one little thing like that, and either then you feel it again, or like I say, there were a few of them that I've been, you know, when you ask yourself the question, is this enough, is this painting enough, is it finished, really, you know, in your heart of your hearts that it isn't when you're asking that, like, because if it was, you'd know. So if it's not enough, you know, it's not enough. And some of them yesterday, I was looking at them and I was beginning to get the feeling of like, oh, I think this is beginning to be enough now, which is quite nice. It's quite nice. But it would be, I think it's just because I've been working in a different way with the colour this time that it feels unfamiliar, you know?
Yeah.
And that's different. And I'm not sure yet whether it's the right thing to do or not. We'll see when we get to the end. But yeah, maybe we'll come back to that another time.
So our main topic this week comes from Jill, who is a practicing artist and tutor living in the Horowhenua region of New Zealand. That will have made everyone in New Zealand laugh, because I have no idea if that's how you say it. But you're in New Zealand, and she took my Find Your Joy course. I presume that means the free one. She had a great time. She's listening to the podcast and catching up. And she sent in a question. So thank you, Jill, for sending us a question. We really appreciate it, because it varies it up from just being our ideas. And Jill's issue is that she says, why do I find it so hard to part with my work? I know I need to get over this impending feeling of loss. But just how do I do that? Why do I feel like I'm losing part of myself if I even contemplate selling a piece of work? I really want to be excited when a potential buyer inquires about a piece of work, rather than ignoring them or putting them off. And then she asks if we ever feel that way. Do you ever feel that way?
It's quite heavy, isn't it? I'm not sure I've ever felt an impending feeling of loss, or people talk about it's like selling your children. I don't think it's ever been like that for me. There are some pieces that I feel really sad to see go. I think there are some paintings that you do that inevitably always feel special or different from some others. Likewise, if I'm honest, I have some paintings that I look back that I forgot I even made them. You know, they just, you know, that one didn't even stick with me. That one, when I look back over the last 2 years, I really remember that one. So I think that there's always a little bit of variety. But, my feeling is, if you're feeling like this about selling them, is selling them the right thing to be doing? And it just strikes me that I always think, like, making art teaches you something as much as it being about creating a product. Like, if we were just interested in creating products to sell, we'd be doing something else. You'd be doing something maybe that's more craft based, that has less of you in it. And for me, the selling part of art has always been an interesting completion to it, because I enjoy the process of showing it. And I love it when someone else finds a piece that they love enough to want to keep in their life.
I also like it because I don't love my own work a few months or years on.
Mm.
So I've already moved. I don't mean I don't like it. I wouldn't put something up for sale if I didn't think it was still good, but I don't feel I lose my attachment to it because I'm already moved on to something else.
Mm-hmm.
So I almost feel like I kept these Ted Hughes paintings a lot longer than I've ever kept anything. I haven't put them up for sale. I made them, you know, finished the last one 6 months ago now or something, and they're still all here. And I have this kind of feeling of, ooh, if I don't sell these soon, if I don't put them somewhere soon, I'm not going to like them anymore. I better hurry up. It's almost like a pressure in the back of my mind that I'll have moved on from this. So that's why I think I don't feel that. Although, like you, I have certain paintings that I've kept for longer than others. That yeah. They were, for me, something special. And I feel like I don't really want that to go yet. And I find it interesting that those ones, there's a couple of occasions I'm going to get woo-woo, but they didn't sell until I was kind of ready for them to sell. Even I put them on my website and other things went around them and they stayed there. And I was always glad I've still got that one. And this just happened about a month ago. I've lost all track of time, but someone got in touch about one of these paintings, which at the time was a big breakthrough painting for me. It was more raw and rough than anything I'd ever called finished before. And something about it was really exciting to me. And I posted it several times on social media and nobody had bitten. And it was just like, and it was there on my website and nobody wanted it. And when she got in touch with me, I felt like, I just felt, oh, this is the right time. This is good. I'm ready to let it go now. So I do know that feeling of, I was putting it out there because it's my job to sell them. But then I was partly feeling like, I hope nobody wants it. But when she did want it, I was happy for it to go. And I still felt a little pang though when I packaged it up, like, oh, I'll never see you in person again. But that's okay. It's like probably on a much smaller scale, like the feeling you might get when your child goes off to university and you know you've done a good job with them, but you're going to miss them. But this is what's supposed to happen. I'm not saying it's on the same scale, but there was this little kind of tug, but still I was glad that it went. So have you ever had a painting that you thought, no, I'm just not getting rid of that?
I've had some that I've kept for a while in recognition, I think, of that feeling what it usually is for me is that usually there is one in a group. Sometimes I can identify it and sometimes not, but there is usually one or another in a group which, you know, like I was talking about at the beginning, feels different, feels a bit of a breakthrough. Often it might be the slightly odd one out. But there's something about it that I really love. And I just think that we learn from our paintings. So there have been some that I have kept for longer. And actually, you know, it's funny that there's a little tiny one that's in my studio at the moment, a 20 centimeter, little tiny one. And lady came and she was in the studio and she was choosing and she was buying a big one. And she looked at this one and she said, oh, that's lovely. Can I buy that too? And I said, no. And she said, oh, but there's something, I really love that. And I said, I know. And that's why I need to keep it at the moment. And she said, well, if you ever change your mind, let me know and I'll have that one. I'll have that one too. And I think it's important to be able to say that. I think it's okay to say, you know, I need to keep some of my work, or there are some paintings that I want to keep. But I think appreciating where you are in this phase of learning from them and then moving on from it is really important. I think if you're holding so tightly to, and, you know, Jill doesn't say whether it sounds like it's kind of all of them rather than a particular painting out of a group. And my worry about that is that you're holding on so tight to what you've done until now that that's not letting you develop into what comes next.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I was thinking, I've got people in my membership who have no interest in selling paintings.
Yeah.
It's not that they're scared to do it. They just don't want to.
Yeah.
That's not why they're making art. They're making art, as you said, for themselves, for self-development, for learning, for growth, for pleasure, for exploration, and they're financially not needing to sell. So it's they can keep them. The issue they have is where to put all the paintings and what to do with them. But they just do not want to sell. And so I'm a bit torn with Jill as to, I think she's got to really think about whether she is that kind of artist, or whether there's something else holding her back from, like you said, is it, would it be good to release a few of these to make mental space for something new? Or is she just someone who, when she dies, there'll be this brilliant retrospective exhibition in a New Zealand museum of all this amazing art that people found in an attic because she didn't want to sell it? And that happens.
Yeah. And, you know, there's no doubt that, you know, the logistics, the practice of selling stuff is a whole other big hoo-ha, you know. Where do you find the people, wrapping it, selling it, conversations with galleries, all of that kind of stuff. I can fully appreciate why some people are just like, no, I don't want to do that. Or I don't need to do that. It feels a little bit. So I was talking once at a party with somebody who dealt with art investment. So, you know, rather than buying a Mondrian, you can buy a 2/1000th of it or something. So you put your, you know, I don't have no idea how much that is. It's probably still quite a lot of money, isn't it? Anyway, you put your little chunk of money in and then you own a 2/1000th of a Mondrian. So if it goes up in value, how they agree whether it sells or not, I don't know. Or you sell your little piece on to somebody else. But the paintings all just sit in a safe. And I just remember it feeling like the saddest thing that anybody had ever told me, that these exquisite, beautiful works of art are just sitting in a safe as a means of investment. It's like, you know, that's not what they're painted for. That's not, you know, do other things if you want to invest. You know, if you want to invest in art, buy a painting that you like from an artist that might be going somewhere and take a bit of a gamble on it, or buy it just because you like it. Do something else for pure investment, because I just think paintings should be seen. And I think if somebody else is, you know, we're not talking about somebody here saying, I'm feeling difficult about starting selling it. You know, a potential buyer inquires about a piece. Just respond to that. You know, is that not a beautiful thing that somebody wants your work as part of their life?
And she says, I really want to be excited when someone inquires. I think
that's why I wonder if it's the logistics of how I feel uncomfortable about setting a price. I don't know about shipping it. And that I completely understand. The first time I packed up a painting and sent it off with a shipper, I felt sick for 3 days. So I totally get that and how that might stop you. And just wonder if it's that rather than losing the piece of work. I don't know.
I wonder, I would suggest, Jill, something that I'm not very good at, but I like suggesting it to other people, which is doing some journal writing about this, because I find it fascinating that that you feel this need to hold on to every part of yourself. And it would be interesting to know, you say, I have an impending feeling of loss. But just how do I do that? Why do I feel like I'm losing part of myself? I would put that in a journal. I feel like I can't sell my paintings because I feel like I'm losing part of myself. I feel like I'm losing part of myself because, or that's a problem because you are losing part of yourself, I suppose, in a way. We put parts of ourselves into the painting, but we lose parts of ourselves when we speak an idea out loud. Everything we give to other people is a little bit of ourselves gone, isn't it? That's what living life is. And I'm wondering what's underneath. I think something's underneath this feeling of not wanting to let anything go. And I think if you did some journaling and kept asking, going one level lower than what you initially say, so I don't want to sell it because I feel like I'm losing part of myself. Why is that? And get deeper down. What does it mean if you lose part of yourself? There's something else under that, I think.
Yeah, I like cycling those kind of things in a little bit of a lasso movement. Like if you approach them dead on, it can sometimes be a little bit too much. I'll give you an example of that. One of my things was feeling guilty about spending money on things that were for my own enjoyment rather than for the family. It felt really selfish. You know, at that stage, I wasn't earning. And so going into an art shop felt like I shouldn't be doing it, quite frankly. So I could have, yes, you can do it kind of head on, like, why does this feel bad? But the other thing that I did was actually just start doing it in other areas, so not art related areas. And, you know, for me, that was something as simple as buying a punnet of raspberries when they were slightly out of season. And you know, when they're in season, they're £2.50. And when they're out of season, they're £3.99. And £3.99 is a lot of money to spend on raspberries. But there they were. And I suddenly had this raspberry urge and I wanted raspberries. And I thought, I'm just going to buy these and enjoy it. And the deal that I made with myself was, I'm not going to feel guilty about the money. I'm going to switch the focus to how much I'm really enjoying these raspberries and the fact that I can choose to do this if I want to. Doesn't mean to say that every time, doesn't mean to say I'm going to spend my life buying out of season raspberries, but I have a choice about what I do and how much I enjoy it. If I really want to do something, if I'm really going to benefit from it, if I'm going to enjoy doing it, then I'll do it. And I think that this kind of thing, this loss thing, you can also do that in other ways to get, you know, move on from some other things, perhaps. Have a bit of a, you know, go through your wardrobe. Go through your wardrobe and get rid of a few clothes that you don't really, because some of it is money. Some of it is money and some of it is time. I've spent money on it, or I've spent time on this. Or often it's like, somebody else gave me this so that I should value it more. So I think sometimes working sort of sideways on these kind of things can help, because you realize then, actually, yeah, that feels a lot better. I mean, what would it feel like? You know, why does it have to, and just reframing it, just not letting yourself talk about it as a feeling of loss.
Oh, I thought of something to reframe. Mm. Instead of I'm losing a part of myself, I'm giving a part of myself, because that's what we're doing. Yep. That's what art is, isn't it? Writing, music, painting. We're giving something of ourselves to other people.
Yep.
As a generous gift. I made this and it's really personal, and now you can have it.
Yep.
So I love that idea. It's maybe reframing it as it's not. And there's something about hoarding, isn't there? There's something about keeping hold, because maybe partly, and Jill, we're just guessing here, so you can say no to any of this, but is part of it, I made these and they're beautiful and I might not make more that are beautiful. So if I let these go, I might not have any others to hang on to, but you will, because if you made these, you're going to make many, many more things. So you have an endless well of stuff inside you. So that might be what comes up when you write about it or think about it. But yeah, it'd be interesting to know if Jill's got a wardrobe full of old clothes and cupboards full of things that she doesn't throw away, or if it's just in her painting that she hangs on to things.
Yeah. And I think that feeling of fear, oh my gosh, I've done it once, can I do it again? You know, I think that I recognize that is very common, I think. And I think, you know, we still feel like this. I mean, I joked a couple of episodes about this, you know, the dodgy copying people in Russia. It's like, you know, good luck with that, because when I start a new painting, I don't know how I'm going to make it again either. You know, that's, you know, that's part of what comes with the territory. So there are various parts of this that do feel familiar. What I do, perhaps in order not to feel this, is just be very aware. So I'm always thankful for the stage that they have brought me to, like what I learned in that painting, what I did, you know. And it might be that, you know, I'm really pleased with the way the light looks in it, or and what was different about that. It introduced me to using new colours, or a mixed color in a different way, or there was something about the feel or the energy of the paint within that I'd never really done before, and that's why it felt special. So I think really taking the time to recognize that can help, because when you recognize what you've learned from it, what you did within that painting, then you've got something else that, you know, like these long shadows or whatever it was, carries you forward to the next one. And the other thing that's much more practical, I think, is keeping a good record, making sure that you have a good photograph of it. And I know, of course, it's not the same thing. I know it's not the same thing, but it can help. You know, when you've got a good visual record of the work that you've done, it's not lost into the ether then, and you know that it still exists, but you can remind yourself visually of it anytime that you want to. So that's something that I definitely do that I think perhaps helps make this a little bit easier.
Yeah. I always keep photographs of everything, not necessarily as organized as I should. I think keeping them organized is important, because at the moment I know where they all are, but in another few years, I might have lost track. So yeah, having them all in one place that you can go back to, because my computer photos are just full of all sorts. So they get lost in there. And I do have a Google Drive folder for them, but not everything's in the Google Drive folder. So need to get
and
better.
And it's very easy as well. I think if you keep on top of that kind of thing, it's very easy. And then if you have a bit where you whoops and you miss it, like I think the ones that I did in April, I don't think I've copied all of those over to my backup yet, and it's just there as a sort of niggle in the back of my mind, you know, you've got to do that. It's a tricky thing, isn't it? It's a tricky thing, but you know, do I think you're alone with it? No, definitely not. Well, I really want to be excited, and if you can, like, you should be excited. I think maybe it's a little bit harder, and perhaps this is worth mentioning. I think it's a bit harder when the inquiry is a bit more anonymous. So when it comes maybe from an Instagram DM from somebody you don't know, or when somebody buys it from your website, it's because it's not as personal. Like the other paintings that I've sold to people who I've met at art fairs or open studios, we've had the conversation, I can visualize them then. It's like when my son goes to university, I'm like, send me a photo of your room so I can imagine where you are.
Mm.
You know, I know who my paintings are with when I've met the people. Whereas when they go via a gallery, it's a little bit of an anticlimax in a way.
Yeah. I was just thinking if I feel that. I actually really like it, I think. I like it when an anonymous person suddenly buys something, because then they become unanonymous once you get in touch with them, and not the gallery, obviously, but if they buy on my website and I don't know who they are, then they get in touch and say, at first it feels anonymous when the thing bings through to say that painting sold, but then the email comes from the person saying, I can't believe I just bought your painting. This is who I am. And this, you know, then I really find that exciting, because when I first started to sell my paintings, I always thought it must be a friend or family who bought it. So when it's a total stranger, actually, I get this little zing of excitement. Oh, yeah, still get that thing of, you want it and you don't even know me. That's amazing.
Oh, we're a hot bundle of mess.
We are. See, we have exactly the same insecurities. So I hope that was helpful, Jill. I think we threw a lot of things at the wall. Hopefully something stuck, because it's very hard when we don't know you, obviously, to know exactly what's behind that. But it would be good to hear from you on one of our social media accounts if you found this helpful, and what you think about what we said.
I think it is. It's an important thing to recognize, though, because we talk a lot about the, you know, the feelings about making work or procrastination or resistance or what happens when you're in the making of it. And the fact that this also happens at the end, you know, sometimes does it really feel like everything's an uphill slope? Do you think we make things a lot harder for ourselves than they really need to be?
Yes. Yes. Full stop. So to close out our episode, as usual, we talk about what's inspired, what we've enjoyed this week. So what about you, Alice?
No, I want to hear yours first, please.
Because of what I've written down.
Yes. And because I saw it on your stories. I didn't see this part of it. I saw the outside and I knew from conversation, you know, that it was coming. And I was like, oh my God. I was there.
So yeah, I was a bit giddy. So my teenage fantasy came true, I've written in the notes, because
this this is a really embarrassing teenage fantasy. If this was your teenage fantasy, you are not living your teenage years to the full. Come on.
I disagree. I think wanting to go into Ted Hughes's bedroom is far more respectable than wanting to go into the Bay City Rollers bedroom, which also probably as a teenager was one of my fantasies. So anyway, yes, I went to visit Ted Hughes's old house, which is called Lumbank, and it's now a writer's retreat run by Arvon Foundation. They have about four houses around the UK where writers can go to. Well, normally it's classes with very famous novelists and biographers, etc., who come and teach writing. But at the moment, they're just doing retreats because of this situation that we're in. You can go and stay there, have your own room, have food made for you in this beautiful setting and write. So anyway, I had contacted them. Oh, just knocked something over. Sorry about that. I had contacted them, months and months ago. And one time my visit got stopped by a lockdown. The next time it got stopped by a freak snowstorm that I got stuck in trying to get there. This time it actually happened. And I went over there at the invitation of Helen, who runs it, who's a wonderful person. And she gave me a tour of the house. And it's a house that she told me I didn't realize he had dreamed of buying when he was married to Sylvia Plath. And he had dreamed of the two of them living there and bringing up a family there. And in 1963, he was thinking about buying it when their marriage collapsed and when shortly after she killed herself. And so he put the whole thing on hold, obviously, and didn't do it. And then some 8 to 10 years later, his mum died and the house is right down the road from where his dad lived. So he must have revisited the idea and decided to buy it to be closer to his dad. And he took his young children there and lived with them there. With, as far as I can tell, a couple of different women. So it's all a bit confusing. And he was only there for 6 months. So he was getting around a bit as usual. But anyway, he didn't stay very long. So he must have not, that dream that he had must have not been what he imagined, and he ended up going to Devon, and that's where he lived out his life, and he leased it to this writing group. But for the time that he was there, I had a walk around and saw where he lived and the renovations that he started and everything. But the exciting part was, so when I left, the funny thing was they have a cat that wanders around, and she said to me, this is Ted. We call him Ted because he's a predatory male who follows the female writers everywhere they go. So I met Ted the cat. And then as I was leaving, she said to me, this is a good lesson for everybody. I said, thank you very much. I've really enjoyed it. And she said, let's stay in touch because we're looking to be more central to the creative, hub around here. We're looking to be more than just about writing. So let's stay in touch. And when I got home, and she gave me the name of a bookstore in the nearby town that's very supportive of local art. And it's a very arty area anyway. So good tip for the bookstore. When I got home, I thought, I'm just going to write to her because I had actually dreamed of an exhibition in this place, but not dared to ask, of course. So I sent her a quick email and said, thank you very much. I really enjoyed it. And here's an idea I've had. The book's coming out in October. What do you think about maybe doing an exhibition of the paintings there? And she sent me an email back saying, tell me the sizes and how many you've got. And there's something coming up in October where maybe it would fit together. So let's just stay in touch and keep talking. So, it could all work out. And just because she was the one to say, maybe we can do something together, I wouldn't have said anything. Mm. And it's a lesson to me that you've got to, it's a good thing she did, because I would have left there saying thank you, goodbye. And I'm going to try and take that with me to the next thing like this I do, to be the one who says, wouldn't it be cool if, wouldn't this be a really good project to do together? Because what they have on the walls, and then I'll shut up, is actual handwritten poems. Some of the poems my paintings are about are on the wall, handwritten by him in frames. That's when I almost passed out. Then I was like, I'm in the presence of the very poem that I made a painting about. So they could actually be there with the poetry in this beautiful setting. So we shall see, but it was very inspiring.
There's two things about that. One is, well, is how, you know, when you have these ideas, it doesn't have to be the fully formed idea, but how it comes from these sort of, you know, these chance things and these meetings and these getting out and, oh, that's just what I'm just wanting to things to happen more on, because that's how these things come.
But we can
being.
Do it. I did it.
We can start doing it now. We can start doing it now. You're right. We absolutely can.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, you had another potential place for an exhibition for these paintings at one point in mind with a gallery, but it sounds like this might be a better location.
Yeah, it might be. It certainly suits me more. It's certainly more exciting to me. It might not be as, you know, lucrative or glamorous as being in the gallery that had originally said they might be interested and then just kind of didn't respond after a while. But I think for me, it feels much more meaningful.
Yeah.
And this goes back to Jill's thing. What do we actually want for our own art? I kind of sometimes get caught up in thinking I want the prestige of this or that gallery, but I really don't.
Yeah.
Being in his house with my work would be far more meaningful.
Yeah.
And it might not happen. So, you know, I don't know. I don't want them to feel they've committed to something, because they haven't, but certainly at the moment it seems like it could be a possibility, and I'll definitely do my best to make it a possibility, because I think it would be cool.
Yeah. It's exciting. Really exciting. Okay, so on the back of that, mine is a complete trivial laugh for you, which is, have you heard Mark Steele's In Town program on radio? So he's a British comedian and he goes around. So if anybody's read the Bill Bryson books,
I love him.
So Mark Steele, he kind of goes around and he does a radio show and he's a guest in different towns in the UK. And he obviously gets there early and researches all these towns' slightly weird idiosyncrasies and the funny things that they do and they have as tourist attractions and words that it's just funny. And then he does a little bit of a stand-up comedy show, which is recorded and on BBC, but I found it on YouTube, so I can share it with you so you can watch the audio on YouTube no matter where you are. And it just happened to be on the radio as I was driving to the studio, and it absolutely made me cry with laughter. So I thought, there you go, I would share that with you this week just for a giggle. If you're in the UK, it will make a lot of sense. I think perhaps maybe if you're not in the UK, it might make you think we're all a bunch of weird nutters, but I'm sure that this isn't.
We are.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it's not just a UK focused thing. I mean, there must be things in the States, you know, everybody has these funny little patches of idiosyncrasies. Anyway, quite funny to listen to. So have a little listen along to that if you want something to cheer you up. And if you like it, of course, you get a whole series of him visiting all sorts of weird places in the, not weird places, you know.
Yeah, but having places, weird things. Weird when things. We moved back from America, we spent 8 weeks in a holiday cottage in a town in Yorkshire called Knaresborough. And they have an annual bed race where people push beds with, somebody's got to be sitting on the bed and the team pushes the bed around the town on a route, and everyone comes out and stands there, and the trains are so packed you can't get on a train to get home afterwards because of the Knaresborough bed race. So that's the kind of thing I imagine that he talks about.
have a listen. It's a little bit different, this one, and there might be some things that surprise you in it. So yeah, that's my inspiration gift this week.
The other thing that inspired me to wrap up is I actually did an interview for next week's episode. So next week, Alice is having a break, and I have already recorded next week's episode with the Cornish artist David Mankin. He is publishing a book, and so am I. And I thought, what better thing could we do than get together, given our topic of a few weeks ago about stop promoting your stuff and get back to your good level of podcasting, that we'll have an episode where we talk about our books. But actually, what it turned into was a fascinating discussion about process and the importance of process. And it really was great. I loved every minute of it. So I'm excited to share that with you. So that'll be next week's episode.
Fantastic. That's good. Well, lovely to talk to you again. Miss you last week.
I know. It was a bit weird. I enjoyed last week's episode, but it was a bit weird not having you to talk to.
Yeah.
Like my regular check-in. It's like having a therapy appointment. Go talk to Alice.
Should we drop in that we might be having a break?
If we think we are, we should probably tease it, shouldn't we?
It might just be worth mentioning. Yeah. Yeah, at the moment, we are thinking that we might have a little bit of a break over the summer. We're not sure. We're kind of winging it a bit each week as we go. But I think we've been going now for, I think we've only had like a week off for Christmas for nearly 130 episodes. So I think it might be good to have a little bit of a break. We've had all sorts of other ideas about we could just do drop-in ones. And, you know, it does feel odd when we don't record, but I think maybe we need to create the space and see what happens. But I don't think either of us are thinking that we won't come back. So just make sure that you're subscribed is what I would say. So hit the subscribe button, because that way you'll know if we take a break or we don't come back. And we'll just mention it over the next few weeks so that people don't freak out and go, what's happened to the podcast this week?
And if you are subscribed and we do take a break and then one of us feels the need to pop on and do a little episode, you'll get notified, whereas otherwise you'll miss it altogether.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the thoughts, is that we might do some kind of off the cuff, short little ad hocs rather than big, long discussions. So that's coming up. Maybe August, but like I say, we don't have any definitive dates or anything. So you've got a few to go yet, so don't panic. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.